Are you like me and tracking the polls obsessively this election year? Well, Dan Pfeiffer's right there with you, and he's taking them seriously, but not literally.
Take an average of the polls. Don't forget about any one poll. And the thing that we try to tell everyone in every episode of this podcast is a poll that has Biden up to and a poll that has Biden down to, they all tell you the exact same thing, which is this is a very, very close race. The goal of this podcast is to help people understand polling and freak out about it just a little bit less.
Explore the latest polls, what they actually mean, and whether or not it's time to hit the panic button. Tune into Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer, Cricket's latest subscriber exclusive show. To get access, subscribe to our Friends of the Pod community only at Cricket.com/friends. Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Sam Sanders.
I'm Jon Lovett.
Tommy Vitor.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer.
We got a very big show for you today. Sam Sanders is here to join us for the news. Sam is the host of the brand new culture podcast Intuit and the podcast Vibe Check.
Yes.
On Vox. So, Sam, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So good to have you back.
It's always awesome to be here.
Funny, funny, funny co-hosts. Well, you should
check out
the show.
Yes, yes. Zach and Saeed, good God.
We'll also be talking about the midterms with one of our all-time favorite senators and friends of the pod, Elizabeth Warren. We also figured the show wouldn't be complete without an EGOT winner. So John Legend is here to talk about some of the criminal justice initiatives he's been working on. And later we'll be facing off with the hosts of Crooked's Gen Z podcast, Dare We Say, in a game that's designed to make us feel old. One more big announcement. We are recording this episode at the SiriusXM studios in LA right now because every weekend from now until the midterm elections, Crooked Media will be taking over the Progress Channel on SiriusXM Radio. We're calling it Crooked Radio.
Presenting Crooked Radio. Sorry. I accidentally said Ladio. Let me start over. Presenting Crooked Radio.
Do you think that worked? Did that work?
Let's keep it in. I don't know how much more we could have expected from Crooked Radio.
I think we got everything out of it that we could.
It's this is our first time on the Ladio. I stole that joke from an extended version of the Ladio thing that we cut.
Anyway, look for Crooked Radio on your satellite radio dial. You can listen to Pod Save America and all of your favorite Crooked Media podcasts. And before we start, you can probably tell we have an audience in the house today. These are volunteers from Vote Save America. Thank you guys for coming. Thanks for being with us. They have been canvassing and phone banking, and you should too. Everyone at home, if you haven't already, please remember to sign up at VoteSaveAmerica.com. It is not too late. This is when we need your help the most. VoteSaveAmerica.com. All right, let's get to the news. The January 6th committee postponed this week's season premiere of Insurrection because of Hurricane Ian, but there's still plenty of news to discuss. We weren't going to let a January 6th hearing go because it was postponed. We're still going to talk about it. Plenty of ongoing threats to democracy from Donald Trump and his goon squad. We learned that the committee has footage of longtime Trump advisor and convicted criminal Roger Stone threatening violence and plotting to overturn the election. Let's take a listen.
Let's just hope we're celebrating.
Yeah.
I really do suspect it'll still be up in the air. But when that happens, the key thing to do is to claim victory. Possession is 9/10 of the law. No, we won. You're wrong. The violence, the voting. Let's get to the violence. Shoot to kill. See an Antifa? Shoot to kill. Come. Done with this bullshit.
That guy's a piece of work.
It's real third act Tony Montana vibes. Just like, we'll go to war. I'll take down the whole cartel. You know?
Tommy,
fucking piles of coke.
Tommy, where does Roger Stone fit into the case that the committee's trying to make about January 6th?
So we do know that from the Cassidy Hutchinson testimony that on January 5th, Trump told Mark Meadows to ask Roger Stone and Michael Flynn, another sort of sociopath who's lost touch with reality, what was going to happen the next day. So Trump seemed to think that Stone had some special unique insight that he wanted to know as president of the United States. We also know that Mark Meadows, then chief of staff, called Roger Stone, called Flynn the evening of the 5th, considered going over to their little makeshift war room with Steve Bannon at the Willard Hotel. And the Oath Keepers, a white nationalist, racist, fringe militia group, was providing security for Roger Stone. They were later very much involved in the violence. So long story short, Roger Stone, as we saw, is sort of planning this little coup out loud. He was actively seeking out violence and talking directly to Trump. So it seems like they're weaving that all together.
Sam, what else do we know about what the committee is planning to focus on when we do have this next hearing? And what are some of the big decisions that they still have to make before they wrap this thing up?
I mean, I don't know. I just hope that they focus on this Roger Stone foolishness. It seems like this is a game changer because now we know that Trump can't claim as if he didn't expect violence. One of his top advisors, one of his really good friends, was hoping for violence and saying, let's get violent. And he was in conversation with Donald Trump the day before. So if I were them, I would just take that home every day, right? Yeah. What else can you really talk about?
Yeah, and I think they can probably decide if they're going to subpoena Trump or subpoena Mike Pence and say, all right, now you have to tell us your conversations with Stone, or subpoena members of Congress and get that more information.
But is it in their best interest to get Trump on a stand? Because he
will tell the truth.
He will just spin around in circles and find new tangents to distract us and point over there and say, look over there, and then they all will. I'm not sure it makes
I'd
sense for them to have Trump.
Sure.
But like, would it help their case? But like,
No.
You know, I mean,
it's about like, ratings, right? Viewers?
Ratings wise, maybe.
Do you think also they should put up on the screen the giant back tattoo of Richard Nixon's face that Roger Stone has?
It is like, I do wonder at some point if all of this is like diminishing marginal returns, because it's like we do also know that Trump wanted violence after Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, when she was like, oh yeah, he was like, don't use the mags for people coming in with weapons to January 6th because they're not going to hurt us anyway.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, they're not going to change any minds. I don't think Trump will ever see true punishment, but I do think that they can keep it top of mind. Keep it top of mind. Make sure people know that this is still a big deal. I think the problem for the whole party now is that people are forgetting about the things that Dems want to talk about, and they're talking about what Abbott and DeSantis want to talk about. And so how do you direct attention to this bullshit?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, the other big decision that the committee is going to have to make is do they send a criminal referral to the Justice Department after they wrap things up? How much does that matter at this point, since it seems like Merrick Garland and DOJ are finally on the case?
Well, I would say that a official criminal referral from Congress has the same legal force as my last tweet.
Which is strong.
Which is saying a lot.
Strong.
There's a lot of people on Twitter who believe that they are federal prosecutors. that their tweets are important and the juries will see them.
I mean,
it's something to think about.
It has no force of law. It's not going to make Merrick Garland more likely to prosecute Trump. Think of it maybe like as a polite nudge. There was a fear at the beginning of this process, when there was a lot of reporting on this debate within the committee about whether they do it or not, that it would somehow make Merrick Garland less likely to pursue a case because it would seem like it was political pressure on Trump. But Merrick Garland already has like 9 cases going against Trump right now. So I don't think this matters one bit at all, either in terms of whether Trump actually gets charged with a crime or whether we can judge this committee as a success. I think it's kind of a distraction or red herring.
His dance card's pretty full at this point with the Trump crimes.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's not a fast moving fellow, that Merrick Garland. He's very methodical, takes his time.
I've just stopped expecting anything to happen to Trump. I think like the only thing that these committee hearings can do is make sure we keep thinking about what he did. But I don't see any of these cases putting him inside of a jail. I don't see any of these cases making him pay for any crimes.
I mean, I think you could end up with an indictment, but I don't think an indictment would stop him from running for president. In fact, I think that would just sort of speed up the process,
support,
if anything.
Even more strong behind
it.
You know, in every great movie about like a hostage situation, there's always the outside plot and the inside plot. You know, it's too boring to just have the people on the outside trying to get the people stuck on the inside out. So you have there's always like the hostage is trying to get out from inside and they got a scheme going. And then the people on the outside are trying to get them out, too. I see it that way.
Who's Bruce Willis?
Yeah, give us the who's who in this.
Is this Ransom? Like, what movie are we talking about here?
It could be Ransom. Remember Ransom?
I've never seen Ransom. What is
Gary
Ransom?
Gary Sinise, Mel Gibson before.
Was there a before?
He probably was always like that.
So
he
good.
He probably was always like that.
Before we knew.
Yeah.
Before we knew. Before we knew.
Anyway.
But the point is,
good metaphor.
I don't know. We don't. There are things we can control. We think we can't. I think we have to act as if. I think that anyone who has been waiting for the Justice Department or the judicial process to save us or save democracy, I've been disappointed continuously. Yeah. So we look. I think we can wake up. I don't want to predict. We can wake up pleasantly surprised. Our crazier things have happened than Donald Trump being frog marched down Fifth Avenue in handcuffs. But it's too nice to think about. So we have to actually beat them.
You know who hasn't been waiting around? The Senate. How about that?
Yeah.
The Senate.
Nice.
The Senate.
Hey, John. What a segue. What a segue.
Look at that.
That's how. That's why he gets. That's why the big chair.
It's not even on the iPad. They look like they are about to pass bipartisan legislation to prevent the next coup from happening, thanks to resistance hero Mitch McConnell, who has announced his support for the electoral...
And Joe Manchin.
See, to me, this is a bigger deal than
Joe Manchin.
Yeah, our two heroes. They return, you know, for one last heist.
So McConnell basically said that he announced his support for the Electoral Count Act reform over the strenuous objections of Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, and most of the House Republicans who tried to overturn the last election. Tommy, what are the highlights of this bill?
You want some highlights?
I would love some highlights.
I'll give you some highlights.
Insurrectionists hate this one weird trick.
Wow.
Sorry, go on.
So as you probably all can recall, Trump's sort of theory of the case legally was that the vice president basically had carte blanche authority to overturn the results of the election. This bill would spell out, no, that the vice president's role is strictly ceremonial, and it would change the number of members of the House or the Senate that need to object to a state's electors for that to go forward. So it's a big deal. And it also sort of closes the loophole that would allow governors and state legislatures to just overturn the results of the election on their own.
Yeah, I mean, it basically what it does with that is it there's a judicial process involved. So like no governor or state legislature on their own can decide to just overturn an election, send their own slate of electors. Like there has to be judicial review. Yeah. So
And it like ups the threshold for Congress to oppose the results.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it's like either one third or a fifth is I think what's been debated.
And like that for me is the big deal. Like that's bigger than whatever the January 6th committee does. This is like honest bipartisan work to make sure that that won't happen again. And I don't know. I don't want to be like, thanks, Mitch, but this is a big deal.
I
agree.
I was gonna say, I think it's great. And so many Democrats are so excited about solving the vice presidential problem until you remind them that Kamala Harris is the vice president. So
Which just to remind some people.
Where is she?
I do worry a little bit that we're fighting the last war, not the next
100%.
War. I worry a little about putting first of all, this, if they want to pursue their, you know, whatever they call it, their legislative supremacy argument, they will take it to the Supreme Court and claim this law is unconstitutional. I still think it's absolutely worth doing, but I don't think it should give us any kind of comfort that they won't find a way to manipulate the system. I mean, these are basically, this is a set of rules to try to make law what were just sort of assumptions that certain things weren't politicized, certain ways of manipulating the system just weren't done. And I think part of the reason you have Republicans coming on board with this in the Senate is they would like that. They would like to not feel as though some of the things that they're being told is a decision is a decision. They want to go back to before when they didn't have to feel as though they were paying a political price simply for certifying election. And fine, hopefully that works. But this is about power, and the only way we can really stop them is preventing Republicans from being in positions of power to break the law, deny the outcomes of elections, and no law from Congress can do everything. I think it's a good thing. I think it's worth doing, but I don't think it should give us false comfort.
I sort of disagree because I think, look, if it was just the clarifying the role of the vice president, it's not a big deal. It's not going to do much. What it does around the state legislatures and governors is a big deal because we've talked a lot about these Republican candidates, like Doug Mastriano becomes governor of Pennsylvania, Carrie Lake becomes governor of Arizona, or we have Republican secretaries of state in those states. They have a lot of power to just send an alternate slate of electors to not certify an election. This would rob them of that power and send it to the courts. Now, are we worried that the courts are stacked with a bunch of right-wing lunatics? Yeah, of course. But at some point, they're like, it's either going to be the justice system or the state legislatures or the governors or Congress does this. So, like, there's going to be someone in charge that figures this out. So I'd rather it be the justice system than Republican state legislatures and Republican governors.
But I think I'm for it. It definitely raises the degree of difficulty stealing an election. But where the insurrection is going to happen in 2024 is going to be between when the votes are cast and when the election is certified at the state level. It is going to be local precinct leaders, local county assessors, not counting votes, refusing to certify at the canvassing boards, et cetera. It's not going to be the governor and the state legislature doing it just in front for everyone to see. It's going to be piecemeal. Just enough votes to make up that 40,000 vote difference was the difference between Joe Biden getting elected and Donald Trump returning to the White House.
That is very true, but that is why that can only be changed at the state level, right? Like those local precincts. That's why we've got to, you know, flip state legislatures across this country.
But I just and then you worry that all of a sudden through this new law we've passed, it's harder for us to object to what we believe is an illegitimate election that is certified by Republican officials at the state level.
Then a court will.
Yes, all I'm saying, I'm for it. We should do it. We should do everything we can to codify as much as we can. The only way we will actually stop them from overturning a democracy is by winning these local elections. That is the thing. 99% of this is that. Yeah. That's all.
That said, to see Mitch McConnell get behind this kind of bill, I'm still like, oh.
Why do you think he did it? Why do you think
I don't think they like that kind of chaos. I think if you are a Mitch McConnell in Congress on the day of the insurrection, in the back of your head, you're saying, what power do I have? What control do I have? This is chaos that affects my job and my life. Whatever party you are, you want some semblance of order.
Yeah.
You know, and like they have to have that so they can do something. And the last thing they want is to not know who's in charge and to have chaos that ends up with their house being ransacked again.
Yeah.
It's definitely notable that there is sort of a slightly different version of this bill in the House. And the only yes votes from Republicans were ones who had were retiring or who had lost a primary. It was only those who had no longer had a political fear of Donald Trump. So, you know, look, I don't give Mitch McConnell credit for much, but I agree with what Sam was saying about him not liking the chaos and not liking the institutions looking like the jokes that they look like after the 2020 election. But I also think like he has shed a little bit of his fear of Trump, as we've seen over the months and years.
I think that's right. And I also wonder if once a bunch of his Republican senators were on board this legislation, if he wondered about the politics of blocking a bipartisan bill to stop the next coup a couple weeks before the election.
Yeah, I also think...
Probably not great politics.
I think a lot of Republican senators like being choked but not being hanged.
Okay, wait, let's walk through this one.
Oh.
Is this like the...
Just keep going.
...other metaphor?
I mean, right. I want it explained.
I do too.
I want to know.
All right.
Who's doing the choke?
With 6 weeks to go until Election Day, McConnell and some other Republicans would like to keep Trump out of the news. Some of them would. But that's going to be a bit harder thanks to next Tuesday's release of New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman's eagerly awaited Trump book, Confidence Man. So Maggie wrote a preview in The Atlantic, and a few outlets got copies of the book, so we already have plenty of tidbits. And let me tell you, it doesn't seem like the guy was the best president. It's not. The spoiler alert from what I've read. What have you guys found from the excerpts and reporting that's new, surprising, particularly notable? Any favorites?
Nothing surprising.
Nothing surprising.
Maggie's like, oh my God, I think he's racist. Oh my God, I think he's transphobic. Oh my God, Maggie, yeah. I'm just like, what annoyed me the most about the Maggie Habermanification of covering Trump during his time in the White House was that journalists like her tried to ascribe some greater method or reason or logic to his madness. There's none. And you read this Atlantic preview she wrote. She does this long, winding piece about her interviews with Trump, and then she gets to the last graph and says, yeah, there's no reason with him. He's just crazy. We knew. And so...
But I think that's useful.
No, it's not.
She's basically saying, this guy's a maniac. That's it. There's nothing.
Counterpoint.
What do we got?
What's the counterpoint? He's crazy.
I'm going to read this
book. Loves him.
I'm going to read it cover to cover. And I know people are mad at her for sitting on scoops. I hope she sat us some more for a sequel. I'm in.
What scoop is there left on Donald Trump?
How? Yeah. But that's
this is what I don't. It's
but
just
see, people
like,
are both yeah. mad. People it's are like both tidbits. Mad. Yeah. She sat on things for the book, and then mad that they don't think the book has anything new. And for me, I just like I'm living in the details.
You know? I just don't know.
She said Jason Miller. She said the Donald Trump said in this book. You know how some guys, you always kind of knew they were gay? Not Jason Miller, not even 1%. I'm sorry, that's funny.
I think there's a lot of news that maybe Lovett didn't read over the last 4 years, and this is like the recap.
I'm catching up.
I think what happened to Maggie's book is I think a lot of things that were probably more blockbuster news kind of came out in the January 6th committee hearing process, because that's you saw her leaking out stuff along the way, which I'm sure she hated doing. She's trying to sell a book. It's notable to me that he did 3 sit-down interviews. Like, this guy, again, not a surprise to anybody, but he's so thirsty for the mainstream media attention that he then attacks. I did love I like the little details too. I like the anecdote that Trump nearly fired Jared and Ivanka via a tweet, his yeah. own daughter. But yeah. John Kelly, of all people, stopped him. And it really made me lose respect for John Kelly, because, like, you had him where you wanted him, and you fucking, yeah. you fumbled the bag, man.
But there were some things where they're like, this is a scoop. And I'm like, nah, that's just, like, people, dude. Oh. Like, when I'm like, Donald Trump saw this room full of black staffers and asked them to get the food. And I was like, not just Donald Trump. Like, a lot of people do this shit. I don't know. It's just that nothing one... about, like, it wasn't surprising.
No.
And I think that, like, there's this kind of, like, liberal desire to have like the one nasty Trump story that takes him out. It doesn't exist.
We're still waiting on that.
It doesn't exist.
That's why I don't quite get the anger at Maggie for the withholding thing. Like, yeah. Like your criticism that it's nothing new, like that's fair.
Yeah.
That's more than like the, like, oh, is she going to report out a story that like
citizens arrest?
He that's lost. He done. Lost in 20. Yeah. You think you're going to report a story that he's going to be like, I quit. I'm out. Yeah. I'm out of public life.
If she reported that Donald Trump was having KKK meetings in the Lincoln bedroom, at this point, it wouldn't change shit.
Nothing.
It wouldn't
you're right.
change shit.
You're right.
If anything, better to have it come out near an election.
Sam,
I don't care.
Sam, to this point, the Washington Post led their excerpt about this, focusing on this excerpt of Trump apparently wanting to use the U.S. military to bomb cartels in Mexico. And I was like, I literally saw a clip of him bragging about this to a wedding party in Mar-a-Lago 3 weeks ago.
Exactly.
I'm not joking.
Exactly.
And this is not news. That is the plot of Clear and Present Danger, a film he saw and got the idea from.
Well, there was a thing where it's just like...
cellulose encased laser-guided bomb.
Well, there
that's
was
for
that,
no one. Go on.
I think his cruelty was underscored in some of these excerpts. You know, when he is being asked to speak to trans issues, he's asking if a hypothetical college student asking about trans rights is cocked or uncocked.
Yeah.
And so, like, the cruelty is underscored, and it's horrible, it's demeaning, but it's also just still not surprising.
I thought what was most insightful about his mindset was during one of the interviews with her, when she, like, asked, would you do it all over again? And he said, yeah, of course. You know, he's like, I got a bunch of rich friends, and no one knows who they are. That, like, it's like, that yeah. is why he
and
does
also,
this.
We and all knew who he was.
We all knew,
we
this,
all knew who he
but
was.
But the hunger for attention and fame is, like, the driving force of Donald Trump. It's not the money. It's not. It's the attention.
It's, you know, there's all these, like, new, every once in a while, we just keep remaking, like, the Jeffrey Dahmer story over and again, like, trying to find something more interesting about these serial killers. And, like, I was thinking about that because it's, when I saw that quote from him, it's like, there's nothing new to find. That's it. He just wants attention. He's broken. He wants attention. It's been That's true right. for 7 years, true for 30 years.
But the utility of the Jeffrey Dahmer story goes way up if Jeffrey Dahmer's still walking the streets.
Absolutely.
That's what's happening right now.
There's that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Touché. 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 Yeah. Touché. That's why he's writing the message box.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think part of the...
That's how you get a Substack going.
I've known Maggie for, like, we all have for like 15, 20 years. I think one of the hard things of this whole presidency for her is she sort of felt like the Cassandra for some of these things. Like, she's known him since the 80s. She knew he was a racist, venal, narcissist monster, and like she was to some extent, I think, constrained by the boundaries of the profession and how political reporters are allowed to report. And I think maybe she's a little more unshackled in this book in a way that's valuable.
I think that, like, they should have just changed her beat years ago. I think she got too into it and too in it. And she was just like, it was almost in certain points hearing her talk about that family, it felt almost incestuous. And God bless her, she's trying real hard, but get some new blood in there and like have a new perspective on it. When I read things from her now or her tweets even now, it's just like they've almost incepted her. I don't know. I don't appreciate I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that. Yeah. I just think that she has walked a really delicate line, and like I know that we feel past it. I know that we feel we've learned a lot, but I do think that we take a little bit for granted how much inside information we got over the last 5 years via Maggie Haberman. That was a lot of like really valuable reporting. And I think sometimes she gets short shrift for just describing what she's hearing without putting much spin on it. And I hear that maybe that people feel as though it's a little too cozy, but I sometimes think it's unfair.
Yeah, I think she's become, for a lot of people, she's not perfect, no one is, become an avatar for what people in the Trump era have been most frustrated about journalism, because she's the most famous reporter covering Trump, and she bears the burden of every mistake every reporter made in this process.
I think the problem is just like what kind of journalism was most important during the Trump years, and the glorification of Maggie's style of reporting made us all believe that access journalism was the most important kind of journalism during those years. The most important kind of work was investigative journalism. That was more important.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who drive Twitter nuts, Nate Cohn had a New York Times piece today where he argued that after a few months where Donald Trump and abortion were dominating the news, the headlines are starting to shift back towards issues like the economy and immigration, which might help Republicans. Dan, do you buy this analysis? And should Democrats try their hardest to keep Trump in the news for the next couple of weeks?
I'm just going
to
wait around until another nerd named Nate comes up with a contrary opinion in 5 minutes.
That is the safest course.
No, look, in all seriousness, I think Nate Cohn is onto something here. Like, you don't have to have done 1,000 focus groups for the wilderness or anything else. If you're just paying attention to the news, it's pretty evident that immigration, in part because of the stunts, the horribly cruel, largely legal stunts of Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott, and just increasing fears about the economy, have become a larger part of the news. In his article, Nate Cohn cites Google Trends, Google search data, basically, that people have been searching those more than abortion and democracy. And that is, I would say, an imperfect tool, to say the least.
Yeah.
But so is polling. So there you go.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is, I think it is, we know from 2016 and 2020, we're very bad at picking who's going to win, particularly in close races. But we do have a lot of ways to figure out what people are thinking about and talking about. Polling is part of that, but you also have search data, you have social sharing data, you can just look at what's in the news. And it's very clear that the issue environment has switched a little bit. That makes sense. There's been a lot of time since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Not that abortion has fallen out of the news by any stretch of the imagination. And it's been a long time since there was a January 6th hearing, right? Like, we had the summer of January 6th hearings in Mar-a-Lago. And so the issue environment has shifted slightly towards issues that right now benefit Republicans. Doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. And we should think about, as Democrats, as people working on campaigns, how do you switch it back? Right? Because ultimately, politics is a battle for issue salience. What are voters thinking about when they make their decision? Are they going to think about the issues you want them to think about, or the issues your opponent wants them to think about? And like, if this hearing were to happen, that would have been part of it. You know, weirdly, Maggie's book helps keep Trump in the news. Keeping Trump in the news is very important, I think. I was talking to Sarah Longwell, who does focus groups for The Bulwark and her podcast, and I know you talked to her for The Wilderness a bunch, for an episode of Political Experts React that's coming out, in which she said, we were talking about the 2017 election in Virginia, and what she said is that after Trump lost, Trump was on the ballot for all the people who love Trump, but not on the ballots for everyone who didn't like Trump. But since this summer, because of the decision on Roe and January 6th, Trump has become on the ballot for the people who kick Trump out of office in 2020, and we have to keep that going if we are going to win. So we have to draw attention back to our issues and make this more a referendum on Republican extremism, and Trump is the best avatar for that.
See, I think the top issue should be Roe and not Trump. I think that, like, everyone has made their mind up on Trump. Everyone knows, every voter knows how they feel about him. I don't think enough voters have yet thought about the ways in which Roe being overturned affects them and their families' lives. And when they do start to think about it, the numbers shift. You know, there's some data that since Roe was overturned, fathers have shifted like 28 points from R to D. You know, that's what I would keep in the headlines. I don't actually think that Trump, Trump, Trump till November does a better job than saying they're going to take away all of our right to abortion.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think the issue, I think what we largely want is we want this election to be about Republican extremism. There is no better real world example that's affecting more people's lives than Roe.
Yeah.
And then all of this is a part of that, right? It is book bans. It is the attacks on LGBTQ plus community. It is everything Ron DeSantis do. It's what Ron DeSantis did in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
And Trump is a part of that as well. And if we keep that story, and that story only works if Roe is at the center of it.
Yeah.
But I think for a large part of our voters, keeping them engaged, keeping them donating, Trump is a part of that. And we're going to want to keep that out there.
That's true. But Roe can get you voters who even kind of like Trump.
Yeah, and especially in a state like Arizona, where they just put back in place an abortion law that would criminalize abortion and put abortion providers in jail.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real world thing that's happening. That's scary to people.
I also think back to the Virginia example. One thing we learned from that Virginia governor's race is you can't force Trump into a race where he might not fit. Like Terry McAuliffe calling him Glenn Trumpkin. Did not work.
Didn't work.
I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I thought that was great.
If it worked, we would have said it was good.
That was clever, I thought.
I think when Trump's in the news, it's going to be better for Democrats. But I think in terms of what Democrats should do, you're right that Republican extremism is what the election has to be about. And we have to do a better job defining what Republican extremism means for you, right?
Yeah.
And so what are the consequences of Dobbs? What are the consequences of their economic plans? What are the consequences of what they're trying to do in states to LGBTQ kids, right? Like we got to hit the consequences more of Republican votes and Republican policies going forward.
That is why so many Democrats have centered on MAGA Republicans or MAGA extremism, not Trump Republicans, because Trump actually helps with some voters who think of him an outsider. But MAGA Republicans allows you to try to get the extremism with the terrible, corrupt Washington, D.C. Republicans like Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell.
Who are also not that popular. Okay, when we come back, we will talk to Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How do you cope when there's something weighing on you or something you need to get off your chest? You know the best way to do it? Best way to cope is to talk about it. Not just cram it down, not do what generations of New Englanders have done, just stuff their feelings down, maybe cover it with a coat of booze. No, you got to talk to someone, you got to work it out, get it off your chest. And just by doing that, you will feel better. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/PSA. Go today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/PSA.
All right, people, we all know the stakes of the 2024 election are high, whether it's keeping the Senate, taking back the House, or stopping Republicans at the state level. If you're ready to make a real difference, sign up for Vote Save America's 2024 volunteer program.
And just to make it interesting, we're pitting you against each other. Vote Save America will sort you onto a team, East or West, and you'll compete with a community of other volunteers to maximize your impact on the ground with opportunities tailored to you and the causes you care about.
The team with the highest volunteering stats could secure the biggest prize of all, the continuation of American democracy. Head to votesaveamerica.com/2024 now and get ready to organize or else.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Donald Trump can't leave the courtroom, so just to rub it in a little, Pod Save America is going on tour. He's probably asleep right now, but if he were conscious, he'd be so, so jealous. The Democracy or Else tour begins in Brooklyn on June 26th, followed by Boston on June 28th. Then we go to Madison, Phoenix, Ann Arbor, and Philly. See all the tour dates and get your tickets now at crooked.com/events.
Please welcome the Democratic Senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren. Senator Warren, welcome back to Pod Save America.
It's good to be with you.
You guys should applaud. You're an audience. They were stunned. They were stunned to see you. Yeah. They forgot how to behave.
Look, I get it. I'm not there in person. So we got to do this remotely. It's tough. It's tough. You got to give us all clues as we go through this.
We're here in the Sirius studio. We have a great audience here. They're very excited for you.
Listen, they were just rude a minute ago. And what they did was obnoxious and rude. And they're sorry. They're going to feel terrible later. But we're moving past it.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll buck up. Okay.
All right. Senator Warren. Inflation is the biggest issue affecting our economy. It's one of the biggest issues affecting this midterms. You have been very critical of the approach that Chairman Powell and the Fed have been taking to fighting inflation. What do you think they're doing wrong, and what should they be doing instead?
So we have to think of inflation. This is about high prices for families. That's a real problem. And so the question is, what causes the problem and what are your tools to fix it? What kind of things are causing inflation right now? Actually, COVID still is. It's shutting down economies in different parts of the world, supply chain kinks that we still have, the war in Ukraine that not only affects energy prices, but also the question about supplies of wheat around the world, and price gouging. You know, those giant corporations that say, as long as we're raising prices anyway, and everybody's talking about inflation, let's take an extra big scoop on prices and boost our profits. Okay, that's what we got going on. So what is the appropriate response to that? Chairman Powell opens his toolbox and he's got basically one tool, raise interest rates. And his idea is raise interest rates and that will slow down the economy and put a lot of people out of work. And that means people will buy less. But notice, it doesn't do anything about COVID. It doesn't do anything about the supply chain. It doesn't do anything about the war in Ukraine. It doesn't do anything about price gouging. And in fact, Chairman Powell has actually said that to me in banking hearings. Nope, can't affect any of those things. So here's my concern. When Chairman Powell is not just moving interest rates up and saying he wants to slow the economy, he is taking extreme steps. Steps like we have not seen in a very long time, just banging away on 0.75 point, 0.75 point, pushing those interest rates up very far, very fast. What he risks is tipping the economy into a recession, too much of a jerk on the economy. And so now we're in a position where, let me get this straight, what we could end up with is prices don't come down because many of the things, not everything, but many of the things that affect those prices are not going to be affected by higher interest rates. And the economy goes into recession and more people are out of work. So the way I look at this is, what is worse than high prices and low unemployment? It's high prices and high unemployment. And that's where I am afraid that Chairman Powell is taking us.
It's been 40 years since we dealt with inflation. As you point out, this is the last time we dealt with inflation. This is the exact path the Fed took, you know, Chairman Volcker did at the time. What would be a different approach than other than sort of trying to force down demand in wages to lower the cost of goods?
Well, one way is to increase supplies. And that's exactly what the Biden administration is trying to do right now. So every time the United States and other countries invest in getting COVID under control, for example, getting more people vaccinated so you don't have to shut down factories and you don't have to shut down transit, then by golly, we take another step toward getting things normalized and bringing those prices back down, plenty of goods available. Second one, same sort of thing on supply chain. Every time we can unkink a supply chain, then we're doing better on pricing. Everything we can do to try to bring down the price of petroleum, of energy, which the president has been doing, strategic oil reserves and so on. And then the other one is go after the big corporations that are engaged in price gouging. And the Department of Justice is doing a certain amount of that. The FTC is doing a certain amount of that, and it helps. All of those, though, are things that help bring down prices. I'll mention a second one. Remember where we started this. Why does this matter? It matters because it's hitting at the family level. And here is where Democrats and Republicans couldn't be in different places. Democrats are doing everything they can to try to bring down costs for families. Look at the Inflation Reduction Act. What do? We're trying to bring down the cost of health care, give Medicare a chance to negotiate prescription drug prices, put a cap on what people pay for insulin, put a cap on what seniors have to pay for prescriptions. What else are we doing? We're putting in place this giant climate bill whose goal is to bring down utility costs for families. And by the way, all paid for by a 15% minimum corporate tax that I think we've been talking about for a long time. But those are things that go directly to the costs that families are bearing every day. It's not as sexy, it doesn't get as many headlines, but it is truly Democrats fighting to bring down costs for families. And where are Republicans on this? They scream, they yell, they say inflation over and over. And what are the number of ideas they have for what to do about it? Zero.
I'm glad you brought that up because the, you know, Republicans, despite the fact that they have no ideas, they've been wrong on policy, the economy's been better under Democratic presidents, all of the polling shows that Republicans have an advantage on the economy. And that's not new. That's been true. That was true in 2020, 2018, 2016, basically every election since 2012. Are there specific things that Democrats could do or say that you think could help sort of narrow that gap or address that discrepancy as we head into the election?
Well, I think part of it is exactly that. Let's just draw the contrast. Let's just remind people, not at some fancy theoretical level, but at a, let's make a list. What are the things, not just that Democrats have promised and that demonstrate who we're fighting for, but what is it that Democrats have delivered? We've delivered on healthcare. We are in the middle of delivering on utility costs. We have delivered on student loan debt, right? We have done things to actually bring down costs for families at the same time that the Republicans not only have zero ideas, how do I say this? They have negative ideas. Their ideas are, don't do those things that would bring down costs for families.
So that, I mean, look, I think that's pretty insulting to Kevin McCarthy, who this week pretended to eat in a diner while rolling out what they're calling a commitment to America. It was one page of, it was a list. There were words and bullets, ostensibly an agenda of some kind. What did you make of the commitment to America?
So I have to say on this, read the first one. I really wish right now that we had the, like you could put it up on the board behind us.
I don't think we can.
Because the first one of these actually was an economic, we're going to lower costs for families. And it was a generic description of exactly what the Democrats have done. And so I feel like there's this moment if they say, hey, that's actually good stuff. This is like how they did on the infrastructure bill, right? Or how they did on the first, on the COVID relief package, where there's help out there for small businesses, they all vote against it and then they go home. And when there's actually some relief delivered, they show up at the ribbon cutting and say, you're welcome to everybody. While they fought on the opposite side. And I think that's the part we have to keep hammering on. And by the way, let me just, if I can, raise the stakes a little bit here. It's not just that Republicans have no good ideas for dealing with inflation. It's not only they're fighting the things we're trying to do, they're looking for things that would make the economy affirmatively worse for tens of millions of American families. Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, says that instead of voting every 5 years on whether to keep Social Security, which is the official Republican position evidently right now in the Senate, Ron Johnson says, let's vote every single year. Let's say to those people who are depending on Social Security, you just got a few more months where you're guaranteed to have it, and then next year it could completely run out. That is the guy who is now carrying the torch for Republicans, the incumbent in Wisconsin, which is why, let me just be clear on this, Mandela Barnes, we need you in the United States Senate. We need you, because we got to get rid of Ron Johnson, somebody whose whole idea on how to fix the economy is let's put Social Security at risk. And of course, while he's at it, let's make sure that women who need access to abortions actually run the possibility that they'll be violating the law, that doctors could be put in jail for performing needed medical procedures. This is the extreme end of the Republican Party. And to me, that's what this fight is all about. It's about economics, it's about extremism, but it's also about showing up for people like Mandela Barnes. And anybody who's listening to this, who really cares about these issues, let me just ask you, send a little money to mandelabarnes.com. He needs help because he's up against an extremist who is telling a story both about Mandela and about the economy that just doesn't jibe with our reality and is deeply, deeply dangerous.
Earlier today, President Biden attempted to recognize a Republican member of Congress for her vote, but she had actually sadly passed away in August. He thought she was in the room. Do you think that this is a gaffe because only dead Democrats vote? Or is that, do you think I misread the controversy?
I do not know about this.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I'm glad we were all here for Elizabeth Warren's last interview on Pod Save America.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that. Before we let you go, thank you so much for your time. Before we let you go, there's somebody here tonight. They're an aspiring musician out of Springfield, Ohio, and they're trying to do their best to kind of help out, but they're worried about the future of democracy. And he just wanted to say hello, and hopefully we thought maybe you, Senator Warren, could buck up. Buck up our guest. Here he is.
Hello.
It's. And look, you know, he's trying to keep people's spirits up, but he's worried, you know. He's an aspiring musician. An album.
I aspire every day.
Hello.
Hello, Senator Warren. How are you?
Listen, I'm a lot better for seeing you. Better than that last thing we just did.
I'm sorry.
I have nothing to do with the last question you got.
Good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. And
good.
I am worried about democracy, I'll tell you that. Do you have words of hope for us?
You know, I do. We got an election coming up in November. And we got a lot of days between now and then. What have we got? About 5 weeks between now and then, right? Almost six. We should be out. We got a chance to get out there every day and affect the direction that our nation takes. You and I both get this. I mean, we've talked about this for a long time, only it's just gotten worse. The difference between the two parties, the Democrats, are fighting to try to make life better for working people, to expand opportunity. The Democrats, who try to live in the real world and try to deal with the real problems that people have. And the Republicans that have just become extremists on abortion, extremists on violence. If they lose, then they talk about taking to the streets. This is our moment. I don't want to wake up on the day after the election and say, gee, we could have given it a little more. So my word of hope is now is the time when it's still open, when it's still in your hands. And can I give my most hopeful? We get two additional Democrats in the United States Senate. Keep the ones we got. And add two, and yes, I'm looking at you, Mandela Barnes in Wisconsin. I'm looking at you, John Fetterman in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And I'm looking at how much fun they're having in Ohio and North Carolina right now. So we've even got some more.
Come on, Tim Ryan.
But yes, yum. But we get two more Democratic senators, two additional ones, who are willing to roll back the filibuster. And we hang on to the House, and all of a sudden, it's not like, okay, just by the skin of our teeth, we can do the things we need to do and we can fight this through. We were just talking about the things we've already gotten done. Think about the things we can do now with that team, because we can actually ensure voting rights for every American citizen to vote and to get that vote counted. We can ensure that Roe versus Wade is the law of the land everywhere. We can do universal child care. You know, we can do the things that work for American families. We can do immigration reform. These are the things that we can come together and work on, and we can invite the Republicans to be part of this. We can do a whole national conversation around it. But the difference between where we are, if we get those couple of additional senators, and if the Republicans are able to take control, this really is, John, you got it right. This is about our democracy. I'm really scared for us. So this is the moment to use your hope, to motivate yourself, to get up off your
fuel
and get out there, give some money, make some phone calls, knock on some doors, and make it happen. Don't you believe we could do this, John?
I believe it. Let's do it.
Let's do
it. Let's do it. My God.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, thank you so much for your time. And we'll be right back. John Legend's going to stick around graciously. Thank you so much.
Joining us today, the aspiring young musician who just asked Elizabeth Warren a question, passionate advocate for criminal justice reform, longtime friend of the pod, who just released a brand new album called Legend, John Legend.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. We haven't done this live in a long time.
A long time.
Yes.
Pre-pandemic, I think.
Yes, definitely pre-pandemic.
Congrats on the new album.
Thank you.
It's been my soundtrack to and from work for the last couple of weeks.
Well,
it's fantastic.
I appreciate it. It's always interesting knowing my friends listen to my music and then knowing what people sometimes do to my music.
Homework.
Excel spreadsheets.
It's, I always wonder if that's a no-go for them. People that know me, have had dinner with me, hung out with me, if they want to invite me into that part of their life.
No comment.
Yeah, sure. Let's get into it. This is the house that Howard Stern built. How is it making music at home during the pandemic? Were you like trapped on Zoom like the rest of us, except with like Rick Ross or somebody?
Well, we did have a few Zoom recording sessions. We don't record at home. We have a studio. It's like a house with a studio in it, but it's like 15 minutes from where we live, so we can get away and go to work. Chrissy shot a lot of her cookbook there as well, so it's like our work creative house. And so we go over there and I have a room that's just a studio, and I would have people Zoom in. I'd have people come over, you know, at the beginning we all masked up like while we were writing songs together, which is weird, but we did it. And then we just were writing songs feeling like, you know, the light was visible at the end of the tunnel. Like we would have something to celebrate soon. It took, you know, some
and that
turns.
Was July of 2020. Yeah.
it took some turns, some ups and downs, but you know, overall it felt like we wanted to write a really like joyful, fun, sexy album, and that's what we worked on starting in early 2021.
Well, you did it.
Thank you.
So let's talk politics, because you're an activist, but you're also a political nerd like
yes,
us.
Yes, very well, much
I don't
so.
Know if people know that. So at some point in every campaign, Republicans hit Democrats on crime. This year is no different.
Of course.
You spent years advocating for the same criminal justice reforms that are now the target of a lot of Republican
sure.
attacks.
We're victims of our own success
of
in
course,
some ways.
Which, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you think Democratic candidates and activists should handle these kind of attacks at a time when a lot of people are actually concerned about crime and violence?
I think, first of all, you acknowledge that people aren't crazy for feeling concerned about crime. I think crime is real. People feel it in their lives when they see homelessness in the street, when they see despair, when they read the news and see what's being reported. They're not insane to feel like, oh, this feels like things are less safe than they were a couple years ago. And let's remind ourselves, we went through a once in a century pandemic. There are all kinds of reasons why there was more despair, more
of a sense of disconnection from society, and there was more crime, particularly during the time in the last 2 years, there was. And so, first of all, we acknowledge that and don't act like they're crazy for feeling that, but also realize that we're already the most policed country in the world. We spend more money on policing than anyone. Realize we're already the leading incarcerator in the world. And so if that were the thing, if those were the things that would make us the safest country in the world, we would be the safest country in the world. Because if those were the solutions, we would already be the safest country in the world. So the question is, well, what else could we do to make us safer? And then if you look at the statistics, the most dangerous states when it comes to gun violence are all Republican states. So when the Republican politicians are attacking us on safety, on crime, and they're not going to do anything about gun violence, they're not going to do any kind of regulation. In fact, they're going to make it easier for you to get a gun now. Even after massacres, they go to the state legislature and write laws to make it easier for you to get a gun, easier for teachers to have guns in the classroom. We're not safer because of that. Yeah. So we need to think about, in addition to, you know, Democrats are very astute at funding the police, despite our reputation. We've been part of building up this carceral state as well as a bipartisan project of being tough on crime. But if those things were going to be the solution to make us the safest country in the world, we would already be that. So what else can we do? Can we fight the spread of guns? Can we do other prevention programs like mental health and drug addiction programs that will help us actually prevent crime? Can we just make families more whole and have the resources they need, the education resources they need, so that we're driving fewer kids to crime in the first place? Can we do some of those things in addition to all the other stuff we're doing to make sure that we really are safer and a healthier society?
So we got this big election coming up, as you folks out there know. Lots of people are focused on the Senate, talking about the House. You have spent a lot of time, years really, encouraging voters to look down the ticket, to meet their DA, to get to know their DAs, understand what a progressive prosecutor does or doesn't do. Can you just help listeners like kind of paint a picture of what electing someone like Larry Krasner in Philadelphia does in real terms versus like maybe a more like law and order DA?
Well, being a district attorney, you have a decent amount of discretion. So we have laws that are written by our legislatures, but the way they're enforced, the way they're taken to court, the way that they're charged and the way sentencing is recommended is usually via the district attorney, sometimes called the state's attorney in some states. And so they have a lot of discretion. So if you're thinking about, well, how do we figure out ways to use incarceration less? How do we think about ways to have more diversion programs? How do we think about ways to get juvenile offenders out of the system? DAs are in a lot of ways the pathway to that because they have so much control over a lot of the discretionary decisions that are made. And so we've been working along with a bunch of other activists around the country on identifying progressive candidates to run for office and then for us to support. And I have personally gone out and stumped for some of these candidates, fundraised for them. Larry Krasner is one of them. And some of the reforms that they bring into bear are things like reducing the use of cash bail or eliminating cash bail. We're one of the only countries in the world that actually uses a cash bail system. Again, if that were going to make us the safest country in the world, we would already be. So it's an unjust system because it basically imprisons you for being poor. Because they're not saying you're in jail because you're dangerous. They're saying you're in jail because you can't afford a certain amount of money. And that means you're in jail because you're poor. And sometimes the amount is $1,000. We saw with like Khalif Browder, it was not a lot of money for plenty of people in America, but it was a lot of money for him. And they used it as a leverage against him to get him to try to plead down. He didn't do it. He said he didn't do it. He insisted he didn't do it. And so he stayed in jail because he couldn't afford bail and because they wouldn't let him out and tried to use that as leverage against him. He ended up dying because of the despair that Rikers brought into his life. Cash bail is an unjust system. It punishes people for being poor, and it locks up way too many people. And so there are progressive DAs around the country that have just decided, we're not going to use it. We're not going to ask for it. So Krasner is one of them. Kim Fox is one of them. And there are folks around the country that are doing that. And we support candidates that advocate those kinds of reforms.
So important.
So big Senate race in your home state of Ohio.
In Ohio. Tim Ryan.
How do we turn your red state blue?
Yeah, what happened?
Well, what's going on?
Well, Obama, as you know, we already have a Democratic senator in Ohio.
His name
is Sherrod Brown.
And, love Sherrod.
And so and Ohio voted for Barack Obama. So it's not so distant, the possibility that we would vote for another Democrat. And I feel like we need the right kind of Democrats in Ohio. And I feel like Tim Ryan is the right kind. And J.D. Vance is like as bad at
out there.
Being a good Ohio candidate as you could be. Like when the deck is stacked in his favor, when it's, you know, a leaning red state that, you know, could be characterized as pretty red, and he's doing as poorly as he's doing in the polls, it's because he's not really that great of a candidate. And it's not just that, it's that Tim Ryan is actually a really good candidate. He really is empathetic. He understands the concerns of working people in Ohio. I grew up in a working class family. My dad was an auto worker. My mother stayed at home with us. And so I can identify with a lot of the struggles that Ohioans feel, even though it's been a while since I've lived there. I remember what it was like growing up there, and I remember the culture there. And I feel like Tim Ryan is able to speak to that in a very authentic way. And I think he really has a good chance of winning there. I'm doing what I can to fundraise for him and to campaign for him. And I think we have a good chance of gaining a seat in Ohio.
Yeah. This is, my in-laws tell me this all the time.
Tim Ryan, yoga and football. J.D. Vance wants to ban porn. You got to tell everybody at the Buckeye games that.
That's a message.
How do people not know that? Tell the college MAGA guys.
Well, honestly, and we need to look at what they want to do to women's freedom.
Yeah. And that's a much more serious rights. Point.
Yeah.
Now I feel like an asshole. Fuck. Trying to lighten it
I didn't
up
know
over
he
here.
Wanted to ban porn.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't feel like that's
hard to keep up.
I don't feel like that's a winning issue with very many people.
No,
nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
You want to stick around for a game? Love it. Love it. Came up with a game just for you.
I would love to play a game.
Perfect.
He's jogging. Love it jogged out.
Sorry, I was reading message box to get ready for the new segment. I gotta know what to say.
So this is a brand new game.
The brand new game. John Legend.
John Love It.
Is he the coolest friend of the pod? Yeah. We can't say for sure. But he's in the conversation.
I'm a genuine fan. I listen to you guys all the time.
It makes me nervous. So we've decided to enlist your help. We've all borne witness over the past few years to political moments that are deeply sincere and spine-tinglingly cringy.
Okay.
Which is
sincere why and cringy.
Yes.
Probably Democrats.
Mostly.
Yes.
Yeah. Republicans insurrect. Democrats read poems.
Yes.
Pen is mightier, we hope.
We censorate.
So it's time for a game we call Nerd Level Zero.
Okay. Oh, look at that.
Nice.
Nice. I'll read a moment. You will all rank that moment on a scale of 1 to 5 Bono poems. How will we know who wins? The winner is Nancy Pelosi, but we're going to try to have fun. All right, here we go.
Okay.
First moment to rank on a scale of 1 to 5 Bono poems. Nancy Pelosi and the Dems kneeling in kente cloth.
Oof. Add some kente. I have to say, I have to plug our show, Sherman Showcase. We have an amazing song on the show called Add Some Kente. And I believe we used one of these photos in the show.
Nice.
It was for a very special Black History Month edition that we did. Sincere and cringe. This is about max, yeah.
This is the standard. This is a 5. We're starting with a 5. Yeah,
that's a 5.
Next, Nancy Pelosi reads a Bono poem about Ukraine.
I got this message this morning from Bono. Ireland's sorrow and pain is now the Ukraine. And St. Patrick's name is now Zelensky.
How about that?
I think it's the smiling.
Yes, I've never seen this clip.
I didn't know that was real.
It's brutal. It's the can you believe it? It's so good.
Look what I just did. That's a 4, maybe.
Yeah, I guess.
What do you think?
The thing is, I feel like reading that poem would have gone over well in that moment, but it was the faces that made it cringier.
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
So I'm only going to rank that like a 2 or 3.
Two or three? Okay, we're giving it a 3. Next up, Andrew Yang trying to shoot a basketball.
No.
Oh, little handle. Does this clip end?
I don't think it's that cringy.
I don't think either. I don't think so either. And like
one, he shoots better than me, so
it did get worse as it went on, though. I will say that.
Trick question, he's not a Democrat.
Yeah, not even.
That is true.
That's third party.
Oh, don't be playing to the crowd.
He's a forward party. Is that what it was? Like that.
We're giving it 0. You're gonna give me a clip of someone being bad at sports?
He needed his shot to be a little more forward, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, hey. I like that. Next up, Chuck Schumer trying to rap.
Oh no!
Oh no! Oh no!
No! No!
No!
Oh no.
How have I never seen that?
I don't know. I don't know how we're just seeing this for the first time.
Is that Rolling Loud?
When did that happen?
Wow.
It had to be in New York, right? That's the only reason he would do this,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he would.
Constituent services.
Let's be honest. Right. There's a camera. He'll be there.
And this wasn't Rosh Hashanah. I don't think. What do we think? 4?
Yeah.
3 to me. I feel like it's 3.
Yeah, because what are you going to expect?
I feel like he knew he didn't have much sauce, so he kept it brief.
That's right.
And I agree with that. And so it's a 3.
Next up, Hillary Clinton doing the Macarena at the 1996 Democratic National Convention.
Brutal.
Yeah.
This rules.
I love it.
They're having so much fun. It's awesome.
That's joy.
Dude just lost.
Does this clip end?
Yeah, this is red.
Oh, a rainbow flag.
Wait a minute.
Please help. She never does it.
She never does it.
Yeah. End the clip.
Hillary never actually did the Macarena.
She never throws it.
She knew
her place, and she's like, I'm going to clap on every quarter note, and that is all I'm doing.
That's right.
She did the right thing.
Y'all not going to make fun of me.
She did the right thing.
Although, 1, 3.
You know, 20 years later.
But I will not critique the unadulterated joy I saw in that room as well.
I agree. Yeah. I think that's right. What are we saying? They're having a good time.
Yeah, they're having fun.
They're not doing it for 2022. They were doing back in 1996 when it was a cool dance. Everyone was into it.
You act like you didn't make the game.
Yeah. Who are you yelling at yourself?
He may not have picked the clips. He seems genuinely surprised by the clips.
Listen, in a lot of ways, this is a finely oiled machine. It runs itself. Hand me the cards. I read the cards. Next up, Ed Markey's breakfast tweet. Just for those listening at home, it's Ed Markey in front of a table that says Doritos, that has Doritos, Lay's, I believe a Snickers bar.
Brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Milky Way and a Cheetos. So Ed Markey, not long for this world. But I don't think it's that cringy. I think it's cool.
It's like a little thirsty, but I don't think it's that cringy.
It's funny because he's like in pretty good shape and he's old. Yeah. Like,
and he has a great Boston accent.
If that's what he's eating, good. More power to him.
Seriously.
Right, God bless him. I wish I could eat all that.
He's a Dunkin' fan.
Yes.
What is the opposite of cringe?
It's the opposite of cringe. It's good.
Yes. I support him.
Show us something cringy, love it. What the hell?
All right, fine. I'll do it. Next up. Lin-Manuel Miranda giving a speech and the Hamilton cast performing Dear Theodosia to commemorate the January 6th insurrection.
Oh boy.
The description, the log line is not good.
Lin-Manuel and his father and the Hamilton singers, whom we'll hear from, said that they were all very honored to be asked to participate today. I call your attention to...
A new year brings hope for the future. New energy to face the tasks ahead of us, and a renewed promise to strengthen the foundations of our democracy. That's what I wrote about in the song Dear Theodosia from Hamilton. I believe no challenge is worth abandoning our efforts to unite as Americans. We'll keep working, generation after generation, until we reach that someday.
How long is this going to go? Now? Yeah, you'll blow us all away
someday. I think this is good. I like this. This is working on me. I'm cringe. Strike me down. I love this. Shame on the producers of this program. This is good.
I mean, these talented people.
I think it's great in isolation.
Right.
I don't think it was the right way to introduce the January 6th hearings.
I feel like this is really a game about Nancy Pelosi doing cringy things and some other people who ended up in here.
I'm losing him. Go to Hillary Clinton saying Pokemon Go to the polls. Go to Hillary Clinton doing the Pokemon Go to the polls things. Hurry.
Because we're going to have a lot of jobs. Jobs from building infrastructure to coding. Man. Creating new apps.
Apps.
I don't know who created Pokemon Go.
It's Nintendo.
All right. Talk
but
about
I'm
it.
Trying to figure out how we get them to have Pokemon go to the polls.
Honestly, it's still great.
It's a classic. It's a classic.
You know what? We're still talking about it.
Yeah, it's good.
It's kind of like my pose on TikTok. It's like knowingly dad on TikTok. That's my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I know I'm too old for this. Like on TikTok. And then I feel like Hillary knew she was being corny on that.
Yeah.
That's up there, though.
It is up there. I will say this is someone who took great relish in writing very cheesy sentences for Hillary Clinton, including George W. Bush and John McCain are two sides of the same coin. It doesn't amount to a whole lot of change.
Hey!
All right, let's end.
He genuinely likes that line because he talks about that all the time.
It's good.
It's good.
All right. Four out of five.
I like it. I like that line.
Thank you, John Legend. Thank you, John Legend. Last one.
Oh.
2016. Where do you got? You got somewhere to be? Gonna bring Dan out here. Trump bad. It's fine.
It's fine. We know what's going to happen next.
All right. Final clip. 2016 DNC's fight song.
Oh, shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother. My hero and our next president, Hillary Clinton.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.
This is working on me too.
That looks cool.
I think it was good.
It was fine.
There's no cringe.
No cringe.
No cringe. Zero cringe.
No cringe. That's our game.
I'm glad we had a nice range of
yeah.
cringe.
We learned. That's why there's a scale.
Yes. We learned maybe we're pretty cringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes everyone's cringe. You either die a hero or you live long enough be cringe.
I did the Yes We Can video with Will.i.am. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
Yes.
And you, by the way, that only became cringe after the fact. It was at the time. Cool. It was like,
it worked at the time.
It worked. Yes.
Sorry, I didn't write the change line. But.
Oh, we'll get a speech off, an old-fashioned speech off over here. Oh, no.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. What does it even mean? Well, what? This. John Legend, thank you so much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we actually will be joined by the host of Dare We Say, Alicia Pascual-Pena and Yasmin Hamidi, for another game. So hang on your hats. End of segment. Go to commercial.
Donald Trump can't leave the courtroom, so just to rub it in a little, Pod Save America is going on tour. He's probably asleep right now, but if he were conscious, he'd be so, so jealous. The Democracy or Else tour begins in Brooklyn on June 26th, followed by Boston on June 28th. Then we go to Madison, Phoenix, Ann Arbor, and Philly. See all the tour dates and get your tickets now at crooked.com/events. Guys, it's been a rough year. It's going to get rougher, and you deserve a little treat for not going insane yet. You could head to the local tiki bar and tell the bartender, do your worst. But we have a better idea for you, which is pick out something from the Crooked Store. The store is stocked with tons of new merch. It's perfect for the spring. And classics like the Friend of the Pod tees that you'll be wearing long after the next administration or the next fascist dictatorship, depending on how things go. Pick up a new tee for the warm weather ahead, a mug that'll remind you to stay involved this election year, or a hat celebrating your favorite pod. Go to crooked.com/store to shop.
Are you like me and tracking the polls obsessively this election year? Well, Dan Pfeiffer's right there with you, and he's taking them seriously, but not literally.
Take an average of the polls. Don't forget about any one poll. And the thing that we try to tell everyone in every episode of this podcast is a poll that has Biden up to and a poll that has Biden down to, they all tell you the exact same thing, which is this is a very, very close race. The goal of this podcast is to help people understand polling and freak out about it just a little bit less.
Explore the latest polls, what they actually mean, and whether or not it's time to hit the panic button. Tune into Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer, Crooked's latest subscriber-exclusive show. To get access, subscribe to our Friends of the Pod community only at crooked.com/friends.
And we're back. Welcome to the studio. The hosts of Crooked's Dare We Say podcast, along with Josie Tota, Alicia Pascal-Pena, and Yasmin Hamidi. Hello to you both. Now, you've joined us because you are going to be pitted against my first wave millennial co-host and Dan. And last wave Gen X co-host. Almost millennial co-host. For a game we're calling Youngs versus Slightly Less Youngs, but still in the prime of their lives.
Okay. Some classic ageism.
Some other titles we considered. Dare We Gray.
Oh. Ooh, I like that one.
Also, Y2K versus Y2Slay. Here's how it works. I'll be asking our Dare We Say host trivia questions about iconic millennial touchstones. Tommy and John and Dan will be asked about Gen Z. Are you ready?
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck, you guys.
Okay.
All right.
For the best generation win.
Yasmin, Alicia, here we go.
All right. Okay.
Jack and Meg White, the band members in White Stripes, were what? A, brother and sister. B, a divorce couple. C, a divorce couple who pretended to be siblings for reasons that both now feel obscure and malevolent. Or D, are actually the same person.
Not the same person.
Can you repeat the question?
No.
What? Are you being
absolutely
serious?
Absolutely not.
As someone with dyslexia. All right. I know their songs.
Can we discuss like, or
yeah,
no?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay. I feel there's like that Nation briefly. Army song. Like, they're really great.
I wanna go to love.
Not too much. We'll have to cut it.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. Can we do B? I think they were.
Espérate. No, I feel like they were.
Silent or silenced?
You're being silenced by me.
I need an answer.
B.
Siblings? What was that one?
No, they
divorcees?
Were...
Divorcees.
But they
I'm sorry, that was incorrect.
All of it was?
It was C. They were a divorced couple that pretended to be siblings.
That's sick.
That's really
That's
weird.
Sick. That's actually
I actually, by the way, I learned That's... that today. I thought up until today, I lived my whole life thinking that they were siblings. You thought they were siblings. They were a divorced couple
That's
pretending to
one.
Be siblings? What a
Wait,
weird thing.
I feel like that's against the law.
No, I don't think it is.
Not in Kentucky.
In no way is it against the law.
Damn. Okay.
There's no way you can find a way to make it against the law. John,
I
Dan, Tommy.
All right.
What did TikTok star Charli D'Amelio get named after? Did I say that right?
What? D'Amelio.
What? D'Amelio?
D'Amelio.
Eat shit. Think it's so cool being young? Don't brag. Being old is something you want to be. It's a goal. It's the only thing you make fun of somebody for a goal that they have.
Aww.
The only other option is death.
That's fair.
Anyway, what did TikTok star Charli D'Amelio get named after her last year? A, a limited edition Dunkin' Donuts drink. B, nail polish. C, a barn owl at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo. D, a newly discovered moth.
Okay, I think she's endorsed by Dunkin' Donuts.
Really?
Well, I like Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay, sure.
But I don't know. I didn't really listen
nail
to the rest.
Polish. I feel like nail polish is the...
Yeah, okay.
No, I
would have gone with the owl, but go with Dunkin'.
We're really split here.
Are you guys sure? Are you sure about that?
You guys are acting like, you guys are acting like Gen X right
I'm
now.
I'm
going to
give you
answer.
Guys a hint. Moth.
It was the only one none
yeah,
of us
it's
thought.
It's the one, the moth.
It's the moth.
Moth.
Incorrect. It was Dunkin' Donuts.
Ah! Yes! We're playing dirty over here.
That's sneaky.
Sneaky fucking
generation. Yes, the greatest Alicia.
If we did bad, you guys couldn't get the first one. You feel
hey,
me? Okay.
Tommy got it.
It's outwit, outlast. It's wit, outplay, outlast. All right.
Confidence.
But now I feel bad. You
we just gaslighted
our Gen Z co-host is going to take the rest.
That was genius.
Gaslight gatekeep girl boss for killing it.
All right, sneaky. Next up. For our Gen Z crew, which is not a real episode of MTV's seminal reality TV show True Life? Is it A, True Life, I'm obsessed with my dog?
No.
That's a real one.
B, True Life, I'm a Staten Island girl. C,
ew.
True Life,
sorry.
I hate my face. D, True Life, I'm horny in Miami.
Ew.
That one.
Or is it E, True Life, all the above?
All the above, 110%.
Wait, no, you're saying which isn't.
No, which is not.
Espérate, what?
Wait.
Our education system.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Really good point. Hey, Ray is a good point.
Which is not all of the above.
Do it on the fly.
You got it. It was all the above.
Yeah, all of those are definitely episodes. True Life was brazy.
True. Here we go.
MTV.
Like lawyers over here. That was really.
Your Honor.
You have no idea.
Your Honor.
You have no idea what it was like.
Really?
You have no idea what it was like. All right.
Before Ridiculous? It was good for a while.
Jersey Shore, right?
All right. John, Tommy, Dan.
Uh-huh.
Who is Jack Harlow?
Oh.
He's a rapper.
You got it.
There's a tweet.
Friends with
He's
Drake.
Also set to make his acting debut in a remake of White Men Can't Jump, even Stop after it. Seeing what happened
what?
To Harry Styles. Yeah.
He's brave.
Apparently
Jack
that.
Is going to be I an actor that, yeah. now?
I'm learning it from this card.
Jack, if you're listening
ask,
to
You
this.
Should ask him the original cast of White Men Can't Jump.
Who is the original How cast of White Men Can't Jump?
I don't even know that movie.
No, the one that was Blade.
Yep.
He's a king.
Yes.
Somebody give me his name. Wesley Snipes. I
yep.
knew that.
Yep.
And the other one.
You're not.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much.
What
have you? But see, I've seen it because it's a classic.
Ken Jennings doesn't tolerate this shit.
Thank you. I love you. You get a hug.
All right. Okay.
All Next right. up. Yep. Whom did Britney Spears famously kiss at the 2003 VMA?
Oh, da, 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 Madonna.
Yeah.
That's correct. Who then kissed Christina Aguilera seconds later.
Yeah.
So by the transitive property also
and Madonna's
Christina Aguilera.
Kissing Tokisha. Do you know who that is?
No.
Sorry. Dominican rapper. Thank you.
Next question. For
nothing will happen and I'll be like, good job.
All right. John, Dan, Tommy, uh-huh. please explain how the Be Real app works. You just have to explain it. We're just going to judge it.
Who's on Be Real? Okay.
Don't tell them. Don't. Okay. Everyone be okay. cool.
You post
how does it work?
A day,
you take a picture
at like a time when it tells
and it posts
you.
Automatically and you can't do anything about it. It's out there because it's supposed
Except
to be.
Except that you have a ton that you can do about it. You fucking stage that shit.
Right. But it's
anything
not.
Else about it?
Anything else about
Alicia,
it?
Can you tell
you do it
about
once
it?
A day, right? Is that wow. right?
Did we get there?
I'm going to say incorrect. I mean, it was you think it was close enough? It was good. You
no.
think it was good? All right.
No.
Once a day.
What's a day?
No.
Someone fill us in.
You think it was right or wrong?
I think it was wrong. I'm sorry.
So why you would tell us what it is?
So Be Real is an amazing app, right?
Okay. They don't pay for this. They're
no,
fine.
No, they're not. Okay.
It's another terrible thing we're doing to ourselves.
Yeah, it's dumb. Unless you want to sponsor us, Be Real. Thank you. it's an app that comes it gives you notification once a day and it
at
tells
a random
you,
point.
Random point that you don't know when it's going to be and they also like they do it
takes a picture from the front and the back.
At the same time, and you can retake it, but it also shows the people how many times you retook the photo.
It's everyone at the same time. It's everyone
yes.
and everyone that is doing Be Real. It's the exact same
yeah.
moment.
Yes.
So in New York right now, if you'll Be Real will happen, and then it looks like a fucking
Flash
Black Bob. Mirror episode.
Yeah, it is a Black Mirror episode.
All right, now... All right, so I feel like they got close enough.
I don't know. Half.
I'll give back to the community. All right. Let's give them a point.
Now... Over to you. Your question. Please explain the Y2K problem.
Oh. Y'all were crazy and thought the world was finna end because it was going to be 000. Was that the whole thing?
No, nope. 2012.
Damn.
That's basically right.
2012?
No. 2012. The movie wasn't it?
Let me try again. So y'all thought that y'all's computers and stuff, you know, like the geriatric people, them, they thought like 200 wasn't going to work
your
on like your phones and computers.
My mom's judging. Your mom's not happy with you.
And y'all thought that like the world was going to explode and end because it was going to be year 200 or 2000. You
First
cannot
answer,
wait.
There.
That's
First
what I would have said.
You cannot say that's wrong.
I would have given that answer.
First answer was there.
Yeah, we were good. You got it. You got it. Thank you.
I was fighting for my life. Thank you.
Maybe
Thank
I don't
you
remember
so much.
Why she cares.
All right. TikTok star and Instagram model Ava Luis
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know. That one you don't know.
Wow.
So you're not quiet now. All right.
Don't come for fee. Rude.
Went on Dr. Phil after going viral for doing what? A, successfully chugging a gallon of milk. B, choreographing sexy dances to Steely Dan songs. C, licking an airplane toilet seat in a coronavirus challenge video. Or D, challenging JoJo Siwa to a fight.
What do you got, Tommy?
Tommy.
I feel like I heard about someone licking a toilet seat. And okay. I assume it was this person.
So sure, see.
You got it.
Yeah.
God, you were so
It was a
online.
Video in March of 2020.
Yeah.
Brave time to fly.
Ew. During COVID?
Next up. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's like anytime, but also like you took your mask off to make a twit.
It was gross in 2019. It wasn't cool then. All right, next. Which of the following was not a real early aughts reality show? Like the 2000s.
Okay,
got
it.
We never came up with a good name for the 00s.
You said aughts, and I said,
I know,
okay.
We didn't have a good name for it. That's we never okay. cracked it. We
that
never cracked
that
it.
Wasn't
and
a
that
good
wasn't
name for
it.
It.
That
was
no, it's okay. Okay. We're here.
Which of the following was not a real early aughts reality show? A, Mr. Personality, a short-lived dating show hosted by Monica Lewinsky.
No way.
B, Are You Hot? A show where a panel of judges evaluated the sexiness of shirtless men and bikini-clad women with the help of a laser pointer. C, The Swan, a show where women got plastic surgery makeovers and then had to compete in a beauty pageant. Or D, One Man's Trash, a show where a bachelorette had to choose a date based solely on the trash found in her prospective suitor's cars.
I'm sorry.
Or E, Were They All Real?
I'm so sorry. What the hell were you guys thinking back then?
I am telling you right now, three of the four of those were real.
No way.
Yes. Yes. And we only made up one. I'll remind you, it's Mr. Personality, Are You Hot, The Swan, and One Man's Trash.
I think it's Mr. Personality because Miss Monica wouldn't do so.
No way.
She wouldn't.
And
I
no way. I think
no,
it's
don't look at me
a...
like that, John.
That's Monica incorrect.
Monica Lewinsky had a dating show?
You don't understand. The
2000s, how did they get her to do that?
You have to understand how bad a time the 2000s were.
Wait, y'all
everyone,
were on drugs,
everyone
right?
Thought George all Bush. The problems were solved and that people couldn't be sexist because James Bond could punch women. Like
wait,
the
what?
Rules were
they
weird.
They said feminism. You can punch women now.
it was a tough time.
So
tough
America,
time.
Like... obliterated this woman in the media and then gave her a dating show.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Briefly.
I didn't know that. I don't remember.
I didn't know that either.
Wow. I would have said that. That would have been
and to everyone listening, we have a pitch deck for One Man's Trash if anyone networks are interested.
I feel like that's what The Bachelor is right now. Like, what?
Which...
Yeah, you know, he knows.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be supportive.
I yucking it up.
Just trying to encourage. Everyone knows I don't watch The Bachelor. It's not a queer space. All right. Which hairstyle has Gen Z summarily canceled? A, the side part, B, the center part, C, ponytail, or D, bangs?
I think side part. Yeah.
You got it. You got it.
Wow.
Alicia with a side
much.
Part right now?
And also me with a side part.
All right. All right, here we go. Which TV personality testified before the House Appropriations Committee on behalf of music education in 2002? A, Paris Hilton, B, Elmo, C, Paula Abdul, or D, Tyra Banks?
Who did? It's either Tyra or Elmo.
Like, I don't can know. Can we actually make it?
I felt that in my spirit.
It's either
I feel
Tyra
like Sesame
or
Street
Elmo.
Does really good
if you
work.
Can you name this episode? It's either Tyra or Elmo.
Okay, I think
I need an answer.
Espérate, Tyra or Elmo?
Or is it Abdul?
No.
Okay.
Even though she's a dance icon and choreographer, I'm going to go Elmo.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Nice.
Thank you so much.
All right,
Sesame
one more
Street
question.
Does good work.
One more question for our 1980s boys.
1980?
Which of the following? Dan got quiet. Yep.
Wow.
All right. Which of the following was not a real storyline on Riverdale?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
A, Jughead fakes its own death. B, Archie fights a bear. C, Veronica performs Jailhouse Rock for Archie outside his juvenile detention center. D, everybody joins an organ harvesting cult. Or E, none of the above, they're all real.
What was the Ooh. Drug they took called? Like Yin Yang or some shit?
Tell me.
What like Jingle.
Jingle Jangle. Thank you. How? I know this from listening to Keep It.
I was like, how do you know all this stuff?
Yeah, I don't watch that show.
You're like, I watch Riverdale.
How does he know this stuff? Just
go with Tommy.
Who's Dewey? Your best friend, Gen Zier? Wait, you should hang out with us. You want to come on Dare We Say?
If you guys want to hang out between like 6 and 8 p.m., I would love to.
Yeah.
Tommy's an early to bed, early to rise type.
I was like, you got it. Well, really turn up hours there.
Yeah. What do you think, Gen Zier?
All of the above.
That's correct. It is all of the above. It's all of the above, which is none of the above. They're all real. It's the golden age of scripted television. Final question for Gen Z. This is for everything because we're tied. I don't know.
Shut up. You made that up.
You made the stakes go all the way up.
Who or what? Now, I'll do like this.
Okay.
If you can tell me without the clues, you win outright. Okay?
Wow.
Wow, we take it all home.
Who or what was T9? What was T9? T9, it was something. That's let me tell true. You. I'll just That's give you good. Some hints. That's I'm going to try to hint.
Spray?
It is not a spray. Don't guess just yet. It is not a spray. I'll tell you this. Here's the thing. It was something everybody used. It was absolutely terrible. And yet we all thought it was amazing. It was on our phones. It was how we texted.
Wait a damn minute. It's the thing. Oh, shit.
T9? Is it like it's a program or something?
No, isn't it like the thing that like a pager?
No.
Psychic.
No.
It was. I'll give you the hint. Is it a boy band?
No.
I've
already gone beyond the text. Is it a pre-smartphone predicting? Is it? It's this dumb thing from your phone. You got it.
Okay. Yeah.
It was basically, just so you know, when we first got cell phones,
right.
You could text, but you only had the numbers. And so you would type using the numbers, but
yeah.
It would help you by predicting what word was next.
Oh, I had that on my old flip phone
sure.
Way in the day, yeah. Back yeah. Like yeah. 70 years ago.
I didn't hate it.
All right, Bob, nobody needed to know that. My first phone had an antenna.
Hold on, sorry. Just
No, John, you can sit over here. You can sit over here.
Can you just, no, so first of all, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Cammie. I'm Alicia's birth mom and Yaz's adoptive mom as of right now.
Yeah.
Nice. And you're saying that Alicia knows about this technology called T9, this ancient technology.
So,
Alicia, can you please be quiet?
Yeah.
I'm having a conversation with your mother.
This is so unfair. You would never have this power if she wasn't.
You can just tell people to be quiet all the time because you say it in Spanish as if that's better. It's not. It's equally rude. It's just rude in another language. Sorry. So sorry.
And I taught you better than that.
Wow. And she
this
had
is
a
work discrimination in her ass.
And she had a T9 phone.
So in fifth grade, we gave her my mom's old cell phone.
Oh, that makes
and she
sense.
Wouldn't my know about it because she refused to use it. She would leave it at the bottom of her book bag and say that she couldn't find it.
It had
and
an antenna.
And that was
why are you yelling? Why are you yelling?
And that's the way she got convinced us to buy her another type of phone.
No,
but
I saved up for my iPhone.
She
gaslit
money.
You,
she Cammie. To use
Cammie, she gaslit you. We can talk about it.
Absolutely. That's
on
her
next
thing.
Episode of Dare We Say. We
I'll be a guest.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're all out of time. We're all out of time.
John, how dare you? You can never.
You listen. You brought your mom to the show.
What are you
going to
expect?
True. Gen Z, Dare We Say, you've won. You've won the
Yay!
Game. Alicia, Yasmin, thank you so much for being here.
That's our show. Thank you to Elizabeth Warren, John Legend, Sam Sanders, Yasmin Hamidi, Alicia Pascual-Pena, and a big thank you to SiriusXM for hosting us. Everyone from Vote Save America who came to the crowd. And check us out on Crooked Radio every weekend through the election on SiriusXM Satellite Radio. Thanks, everyone. Pod Save America is a Crooked Media production. The executive producer is Michael Martinez. Our senior producer is Andy Gardner-Bernstein. Our producers are Olivia Martinez and Haley Muse. It's mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis sound engineer the show. Thanks to Tanya Sominator, Sandy Gerard, Hallie Kiefer, Ari Schwartz, Andy Taft, and Justine Howe for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Phoebe Bradford, Milo Kim, and Amelia Montu. Our episodes are uploaded as videos at youtube.com/crookedmedia.